You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. Hello and welcome to Podcast of the Lotus Eaters for Tuesday the 3rd of June, episode 1178. So, right, what are we going to be talking about today? Well, I've got Beau and Faraz with me. Faraz is going to be talking about the efforts to keep the Ukraine war going. Mm-hmm. They seem quite determined to that. You're going to be talking about maybe Taiwan is going to kick off soon.
World War III.
Yes.
It's definitely happening. It's already started. Now, yeah, just talk a little bit about Taiwan.
Yes, war.
Yeah.
Press the button.
Happy now.
And I will cover, how to put this delicately, Kyrgyzstan's interesting relationship with attractive young Ukrainian men, which might lead to the situation where we need a new prime minister. So we're going to have a quick look at who the contenders are. Okay. And yes.
Sure, it's a very interesting field with amazing numbers of rich pickings. All with experience in business, politics, life.
You said on the podcast yesterday, words to the effect of they can't replace Starmer because they've got no one else. And I thought, aha, challenge accepted, sir. It may be my toughest challenge yet, but we see what we can come up. Also, we have to acknowledge that we are aware that Dank has called us out on a wrestling challenge. That was something that came up at the, one of the election streams, we chatted about doing that. I don't know about wrestling. I can box. I don't know how to wrestle.
Okay.
But I am up for some sort of, you know, intra-company violence, charity, whatever. You know, that would be good. I'm not gonna say who. It's Carl. Somebody is against us doing this.
Right.
But there are some of us on the staff. Again, not going to mention any names. But it's me who's pushing very hard for this.
Well, Harry. Harry loves wrestling, does he?
Harry a wrestler, is he?
Oh, he loves wrestling, yeah.
All right.
I wouldn't do it. I'll shatter like glass. I'll be a ref. I'll be the ref. How about that?
Right. Is Harry the sort of, you know, the 70s wrestling where they actually wrestle, or the ones with the folded chairs and the choreo?
I think more that.
Right, okay.
I don't know.
Fair enough. I don't know. Luca is apparently a top-rated fencer, so
really?
One of Europe's best. So maybe we could do boxing, fencing and wrestling or something.
I don't know what Dank's staff look like, though. They might be giants among men. We might turn up and they're all 6'6", 250-pound giant Highlanders. And we're like, oh, oh, we didn't realise you were all massive.
There'd have to be some kind of weight classification.
They're still Scots, so they're going to be a bit, you know...
Slightly more violent than normal.
Yeah, a bit methy, a bit... You know, a bit wiry.
They all come messed up. It's always good to have a big man versus a little man, like Kane versus Xbox or something. That's always a good thing.
Well, actually, Carl's good with a sling, isn't he?
Oh.
So, That's whatever. There's that. Right, anyway, on to something serious.
Yes, so let's talk a little bit about Ukraine. Big departure from fairy tales, if you watched that segment yesterday. But
I like
today. Thank you. But today we're talking about the Russia-Ukraine war and where we are after the 1 June attack by Ukrainian forces against a bunch of Russian air bases that host Russia's strategic bombing fleet. Now, what does strategic mean? Strategic means capable of carrying nuclear weapons. It doesn't mean that these planes only carry nuclear weapons. They are used for other purposes, launching cruise missiles, things of that nature, regular old-fashioned bombing runs. But the importance of these planes is that they are capable of carrying nuclear weapons, and the use of weapons that can, of systems that can carry nuclear weapons, is governed by the START Treaty, or the New START Treaty, to be accurate. The objective of this treaty is for Russia and the United States to limit the number of deployed nuclear weapons that they have, with a view towards managing escalation and the prospects of escalation. The idea is that both sides have eyes on what each other are doing, and the aim of that is to assure the other side that they aren't planning to launch a surprise nuclear attack on anyone. So that kind of enhanced transparency and enhanced visibility allows the Russians and the Americans to maintain what they refer to as strategic balance. They both know what the other side has deployed. And that then leads to a level of stability, because they're assured that they aren't planning sudden strikes on each other. Now, the Russians suspended their participation in the START Treaty in 2023, but only up to a point. The treaty involves a series of regular inspections of the weapons that the other side is doing, the other side holds. It involves regular notifications of planned drills, of planned exercises that involve these weapons, so that nobody's under the impression that a sudden nuclear attack is being launched. But they kept up the bit that says we only deploy a certain limited number of nukes. And that is, I think, the most important part, because it stops the two sides from engaging in a nuclear arms race, and a nuclear arms race can lead either side to take conventional action and can trigger war. If you're worried that one side is planning to nuke you soon, then your best course of action might be to actually initiate a war and take conventionally as much as you can to manage that threat. I
mean, my rough understanding of the Cold War is the most dicey bits was whenever it looked like one side might start to get more of an advantage over the other one.
Which precisely.
Push things, you know, the Cuban missile.
Precisely.
And whatever else.
Exactly.
One
exactly.
of the things I thought when I saw this, that that there was talk of nuclear bombers.
Yes.
I was thinking, it's not 1962. You don't put nukes on bombers particularly. That's the whole point of having a missile program, isn't it?
So you have a nuclear triad, is how it's described.
Okay.
And that involves the bombers, which are part of it.
Still to
yes,
this day?
Still to this day.
Because didn't the US end their strategic bomber thing
quite
a few years ago?
The B-52s are still there, and the B-2s are still there. These are the jets that are most likely to be used for nuclear attacks. And then there's a range of other jets that are also capable of carrying.
Oh, I know there's loads of other things. Like you can have really tiny tactical nukes. There's even a nuclear artillery shell, right?
Yes.
So I think they even created a nuclear bazooka.
I've
check it out on Wikipedia. Yeah, the tiniest of tactical nukes. But anyway, if there was going to be a nuclear exchange, Russia would put it on a missile, wouldn't they?
So they would put it on a submarine. It's a triad.
Yeah.
A bomber, a missile, or a submarine.
A missile fired from a submarine still, though.
A missile, as well as missiles fired from submarines.
Right.
And the idea is that the submarines, because they would survive an attack, give you a second strike capability. Whereas traditionally, the first strike capability would be either aviation or ground-launched missiles. Because it's on a submarine, it's a little bit smaller, more compact, etc. Everything in this domain comes with certain trade-offs. But the key point is that one of the reasons that nuclear-capable jets are kept out in the open, at least according to General Michael Flynn, former national security advisor to the United States, so he would know, is to, as part of the application of the START Treaty, because if you put all of your bombers underneath hangars,
everybody's keeping their cards on the table.
Everybody's keeping their cards on the table, and that gives assurances that you're not planning any nasty surprises.
Yes. Okay.
That so makes sense. There is therefore an understanding that we do not muck about with this stuff, because that leads to uncontrolled escalation. And so what do the Ukrainians do? They decide to attack the one thing that can cause uncontrolled escalation. Let's have a look at the videos here.
Borden! Borden! Коптер опять взлетел. Откуда взлетает? Ничего не понятно, блядь. Вот он, клоун, блядь. Оба ни с того ни с сего, сука.
It's a bit, what shall I say, irresponsible?
Ever so slightly.
Yeah, slightly, yeah.
So, this one is more interesting because Russian civilians jumped on the lorries and tried to stop more drones from coming out.
Right?
Very. And four or five nuclear bases that host the Russian Air Force, at which there are strategic bombers, were attacked. The reports of the extent of the damage vary quite considerably. The Ukrainians are saying that they destroyed 40 of those, which would be a huge number.
4-0. Strategic bombers. These things cost what? 300 million each or something?
Hundreds of millions. The Russians do it cheaper. And these, for the most part, are developed in the Soviet era. Right. And they, you know, not everybody is trying to build the fastest possible jet that can deploy nukes, because that upsets the strategic balance if suddenly somebody believes that the time to deliver a nuclear weapon has gone from, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours to 1 hour.
Ah, okay.
The decision-making then becomes much more complex.
So actually this could help Russia, because then they can reasonably say, look, we lost 40 bombers. We're going to have to build 40 high-tech ones now.
That becomes part of the dynamic.
Right.
That becomes a possible part of the dynamic.
And they just happen to be a hell of a lot faster and more stealthy than the old ones.
Which puts everybody else in danger. Because one of the things that you want to maintain is a decent, long enough window for you to be able to check with the adversary whether or not our satellites are malfunctioning, to check with your own military, is this actually credible, etc. Yes. So the shorter the time for delivery, the more quickly you must react, the more likely you are to do something reckless.
Chance of error goes up.
Exactly.
Because I thought I heard that the Ukrainians wanted to do a drone strike on the nuke early warning system in Russia.
They did.
Attack one that wasn't one of their radars facing towards Ukraine.
They did attack
and the
one.
The Americans were like, "God, don't do that." Because if you do that,
they did it.
The things you've talked about,
they did it.
Oh, they did it.
They did attack one of the early warning systems,
right?
Which was again an act of gross irresponsibility, because then you're changing the dynamics of the war from being one between Russia and Ukraine to one between Russia and the United States.
Well, I think it kind of
and
is.
No one comes out. It is by proxy.
Yes.
So everybody uses proxy.
But it's very much in Ukraine's interest to make it overt.
Exactly. So within the sort of established rules of the game, everybody uses proxies against everyone else. That's fine. However, we do not mess around with each other's nuclear capabilities, because the consequences of that are rather more dramatic than arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan or supporting the Syrian government or trying to kick out the French from Africa as the Russians are doing, or whatever else is being done. So there are layers to this game, and different layers have different rules. Mm-hmm. So within the lowest layer is to use proxies. And within that, the further away from the other country's borders, the more permissible it is. So you will arm the Vietnamese, or you will arm the Koreans, or whoever, because that's far enough, and Moscow or St. Petersburg or Washington or New York are not at risk. So that's okay. Going right up to Russia's borders, as in supporting Ukraine in a war, that's coming close to a red line within the use of proxies.
Yeah.
Using that to muck about with nuclear stuff,
That's insane.
Well, that's just turn this around. Let's say the Russians were sending tens of billions of funding to the Mexican cartels, and the Mexican cartels were doing drone attacks on US nuclear early warning systems. I mean, that would not go down well at all, would
it? No. That would be, everybody would accept that this is extremely reckless, that this is extremely irresponsible, that you're putting the safety of humanity at risk, that you're putting the survival of the species at risk. Everybody would, if it was the other way around, if somebody messed with a British nuclear triad or with the French or with the Americans, there would be wide consensus that this is extremely irresponsible, bordering on insane.
I mean, you don't really need to with the British ones because our submarines should keep breaking down anyway.
Which is a slightly different story.
Yes.
But this is what the Ukrainians did. Now, there's another element to this, which is they used civilian trucks to launch these drones from and civilian warehouses.
Apparently the drivers didn't know.
And apparently the drivers did not know that they were being used in an attack. They personally, as individuals, you're told to go drive container from A to B. You don't look inside it. That would be breaking the law. You're not meant to look inside it. It's none of your business. You're just carrying civilian goods, whatever the paperwork says you're carrying. However, the Russians also have a pretty sophisticated capability to launch missiles from container ships, as do the Iranians, as do the Chinese, as do the Americans if they wanted to. So it's possible to launch things from containers. It's just understood that you don't play around with the civilian supply chain in this way, because then the entirety of global trade breaks down. If when I see a Chinese ship, I should read it as a military threat, that's it. We're not trading with China anymore.
Yes.
There is no distinction between civilian and military.
You're not going to let a Chinese cargo ship come steaming into one of your major ports,
and vice versa. The Chinese would not allow American or British or French cargo ships anywhere near their ports because these containers could be carrying weapons.
As a strategy, this seems to me, I might be wrong, but it just seems desperate now. It's from the Ukrainian point of view, it's so reckless.
Militarily,
reckless, it just feels like it's a last ditch Hail Mary desperation move.
Exactly what it is, I would have thought.
On one side it is. On the other side, they're showing the Russians that we can take the fight to you in enormous depth. One of the bases that was attacked was maybe 4,600 kilometers from the border of Ukraine. So this was deep in Russian territory.
How many bases did they hit? And were they
four
all
or five.
Simultaneously?
Yes, simultaneously. The Russians are saying three. There's a reporting of four or five. So there's
a hand it to
picture.
Them. This is a pretty good op. I mean, whether it's wise or not, but it's a good op.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a very impressive operation. It's also dangerous in terms of the nuclear balance between the United States and Russia.
Yes.
There's no way the Russians will believe that either the British or the Americans were not involved in planning and executing this.
Well, wasn't there a truth social from Trump that you could read it to think, oh, maybe he knew? Something like that.
No, the White House is absolutely denying that they had any idea. Okay. The White House is denying that they knew about this, because for them to admit to knowing about this would be insane.
Aren't the Americans providing all of the intel that lets Ukraine do anything?
The Americans, the British, and the French are all providing intelligence in different ways.
Ah, so actually, it could have been so that they might have been relying on the French or the British for this one.
Conceivably,
right?
Conceivably, but from a risk management perspective, the Russians have to believe that the Americans were involved. And they have to plan some way of retaliating. And they wouldn't retaliate against the US in an open manner. The most likely people to be targeted are therefore the French and the British. And I would argue the British more so than the French. Because British intelligence is up to its neck in the Ukraine war. And they and the French have taken the most hardline positions there.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So what kind of target? I mean, a mine on a British destroyer in East or something?
Conceivable. I mean, there's always been reporting of a relationship between the Russians and the Yemenis, the Houthi in Yemen, and that would be part of the Russian response to the activity in the Black Sea. They would retaliate in the Red Sea. Both sides would have plausible deniability. So that's one possible area. Another possible area is to, you know, send a truck full of drones and say that it was the Palestine Action Front that was attacking a factory producing F-35s.
Mm.
Or use one of these various far-left loony groups that are operating in Britain and support them to conduct some kind of sabotage attack against energy, against shipping, against aviation, something sort of to extract a similar price.
Yes. So you'd send in an operative to basically take these useful idiots, skill them up.
It's not difficult to use.
Then disappear.
Exactly.
Let them do it. And the intelligence services, they know that this was a retaliation, but it's not provable. And
everybody would know that this is happening.
Yes.
But nobody would admit that this is happening, because admitting it imposes on you a responsibility to respond.
Mm.
So you don't admit that you know that it was the Russians. The other part to think about is that the normalization of the use of drones and civilian containers in this way means that anybody else can do it now.
Mm. I was thinking that you drive a truck into like St. James's Park, just behind Downing Street, Whitehall. I mean, if the IRA could fire a mortar into the number 10 back garden back in the 70s from...
Well, when the cabinet...
Dominic Cummings said, we've got no defence against drones, really.
You know when the cabinet meetings are, you know which window they're through. You could fly a drone through that, no problem.
So not to encourage this, to support this, but to say that when you cross these lines, it encourages others to cross these lines. It comes with a price. It comes with a risk. Mm. It's not that you do this once and then, okay, you're happy and nothing else is going to happen. It's that when you cross these kinds of lines, there are consequences. The consequences will be hidden from our view. We won't know exactly what's happened. People in the intelligence services will know. Yeah. They will decide what to say to the public and what not to say to the public. And they will decide how to weaponize the narrative. Because we see Keir Starmer saying, there's going to be this massive defense expansion. We're going on a war footing. We're getting ready to fight. We know that Whitehall is thinking about conscription. We know that they're thinking about how are they going to use reserves? How are they going to use reservists, etc. And then you do something like this and you hit a key part of the Russian nuclear triad. And then you say, well, why...
I mean, there are a whole bunch of attacks in Britain which have been blamed on the Russians. Now, it's always very difficult to know if they actually were the Russians, because Russia gets blamed for almost everything that goes wrong.
Probably so, some of them were.
So
the poisonings and the assassinations, yes, odds are they were. The guys that were supposedly going to see a cathedral in Salisbury and then ended up poisoning a guy and his daughter with Novichok. Yes. Yeah, that was, you know, Novichok only comes from a certain number of places.
Let's not forget the polonium 210 in Alexander Litvinenko's system.
Let's not forget that.
Let's not forget that.
Although it didn't happen in Britain, though.
I thought it was a teapot in a hotel in London.
Was it?
I think so. I might be getting the details wrong, but
I might be confused. Okay. Anyway. So you see this kind of dynamic going on, and then you see equally dangerous things with the Estonian military, of all people, who don't have a navy, seizing a Russian ship in the Baltics in April. And then you see a response to that. I think this one was the ship that was seized in April to try to stop Russia from exporting oil, to sort of enforce the sanctions militarily on Russia, essentially. And then the next time the Estonians did this, the Russians sent in a jet, an Su-35, into Estonian airspace to make sure that nobody would dare touch their tankers. So you're seeing the Baltic states, as well as Ukraine, escalating this conflict in a way that risks drawing in the big players. Mm. That is the fullness of NATO officially, as opposed to by giving aid to Ukraine. Mm. And you see this kind of gambling mindset by two-bit players like Zelensky, like the Estonians, like the Lithuanians, who are risking everybody because they don't like Putin and they have a problem with the Russians. When really, if you're stuck next to a giant like Russia, it's very unwise to provoke it, because even if the big allies come in and help you, the war will happen on your territory with your people as cannon fodder.
Mind you, Zelensky seems to have no problem using all of his people as cannon fodder.
Exactly. Exactly. So this risk-taking is very dangerous.
And actually, this war has made Zelensky incredibly rich.
Yes. And
it depends which Estonians you're talking about. Some of them might do incredibly well out of a war.
Yes, absolutely. But at the end of the day, hitting some Russian jets. So the Russians are, it seems that they're admitting to 6 to 12. Or sorry, they're admitting to 8 to 12 of their bombers being
hit. Still a big number.
Which is still a very significant number. But A, it doesn't do anything to their industrial capability. They can build more of them, and they will be newer and better equipped, etc., etc. And B, it means that they must commit to the war completely. So we saw yesterday negotiations happening in Istanbul, as ordered by Trump, and as Trump keeps on insisting that they must have negotiations and end the war.
Yes, that was the crazy thing, because it was, so this attack happened like a couple of days before peace talks.
One day before the peace talks. And you see this as the Ukrainians saying, well, okay, we're not interested in the negotiations. And if you look at the official positions on the two sides, the Ukrainians are saying they won't recognize any of the captured Russian territories as being now part of Russia, which is really a red line for the Russians. They've taken this territory. They're not going to give it up. And they're seeing that they will insist on joining the EU and NATO, which is the initial cause of the war as far as the Russians are concerned.
And the Ukrainians are not even conceding Sevastopol.
And insisting that Crimea will also be theirs.
Okay.
And I mean, all they're offering...
bid.
Yeah. All they're offering is some sanctions relief, conditional that the Russians also pay some compensation for the war.
This is Monty Python and the Black Knight at this point.
More or less. Whereas the Russians are saying that absolutely not. These territories will be ours. The Ukrainians must be disarmed, with enormous limits on the Ukrainian military in terms of size and equipment. And the Ukrainians must maintain neutrality in perpetuity, and NATO and the EU must give written guarantees to that effect. So the positions of the two sides are extremely far apart.
Well, the positions might be different, but the Russians can probably get what they want by just continuing the war.
So there is a realistic... Exactly. There is a realistic political objective for the Russians to pursue, which is to keep fighting the war until the Ukrainian military breaks. Or until they reach Kiev. And now they're launching an attack from Sumy, and that gets them much closer to Kiev and overstretches the Ukrainian forces. For the Ukrainians, there is no realistic objective for them to pursue.
Yes.
That's the most important point. And they tried invading Russian territory in Kursk. If they'd taken Kursk, that would have made no difference.
Yeah.
But they got kicked out, and they got completely defeated, and it cost them a huge amount of territory in the Donbass itself. So,
I mean, all credit to them. They've been bloody tenacious. They've had a lot longer than I would have thought. But they are just chewing through men and not gaining anything.
And they are doing things that risk the safety of their backers. That's what I think is the most important point. There is a level of recklessness in the pursuit of this war that's really, really dangerous. Shall we read a couple of the comments?
Yes, sure.
All right. So, OPHUK, we should start thinking about what's going to happen after this war. A weak and imploding Russia propped up and controlled by China isn't in anyone's interest. At the start of this conflict, I wrote a piece saying, imagining Russia defeated. And it is much worse for Russia to be fully defeated and to become a complete Chinese Lebensraum than for the Russians to win the war. And then from Alex Adamson, this is a comment for you, Bo. Hello, Bo. What's the update on my request to cover Sharp on the site? I've almost finished reading the books since last I asked. 4 hours left on Sharp's Devil, and that's it. Okay, whatever that is.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to. First of all, I'd say you can go on my channel, History Bro, where I've done the first four.
You've already done most
of them. I've done the first four novels. There's loads. There's 20 plus. I would do that. I will do that. Maybe sure. Maybe with Luca or something. I mean, there's always a bit of a backlog going on. So even if I started on it now, you wouldn't actually see it for weeks and weeks and weeks. But I would love to do that. I will. I want to do that. I will do that. But you won't see it.
Do it in costume. Yes.
Could do.
That'd be awesome.
I get the actual green jackets. The sharp green jackets. Hopefully I will do that. But you won't see it anytime soon, so I'm afraid.
Okay.
And then from the engaged view, I think Ukraine attacked aircraft that were fitted to carry and launch the Kinzhal hypersonic. Yes, but they are also nuclear capable. So these weapon systems can fire both conventional and unconventional. And then there's a couple of comments about Dank, Count Dankula. Just distract Dank's boys with sheep, default victory.
No, that's Welsh, not Scots. Maybe Scots is, but I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And from Based Ape, when are we fighting Dank's boys? Watch out for headbutts and eye gouging. Scots fight dirty. Their weakness is food. Throw tactical Mars bars to distract them.
Yep.
I will find what a strategic Mars bar is and I will use it.
A weapons grade deep fried Mars bar.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Could I get the mouse?
Oh, yes.
On my thing. Oh, all right. So is this all my stuff?
I think so. Definitely not mine.
All right. So thought we could talk a little bit about Taiwan, because at the weekend or a few days ago now, Pete Hegseth made some comments about Taiwan, basically speaking to a bunch of people in the sort of American military establishment, saying, you know, let's not forget about Taiwan. Let's not take out. Remember, the Chinese do still want Taiwan. I think the Chinese line, or I saw a senior Chinese official saying, yeah, we want reunification. That's how they talk about it. The Chinese talk about it as reunification. They don't recognize Taiwan. In fact, actually, most of the world doesn't formally, legally recognize Taiwan.
The official position of the United States and Britain is that Taiwan is part of China.
Since the 70s, I think, since Nixon.
That's the official position.
But we'll still use the Pacific Fleet to defend them if we need it. So it's a funny sort of...
I don't get how that works at all. We can see that Taiwan is part of China, but also we might go to war to stop you getting them.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it is a bit of an odd situation. Yeah. Well, it's part of sort of the post-World War II sort of US military paradigm. You know, we'll keep massive bases in Germany forever. Who knows? We'll defend South Korea against North Korea forever. We'll defend the right of Taiwan to be independent from the CCP forever. I don't know. Yeah, it's still all part of that, right?
It feels like they're walking it back, like the CHIPS Act and a whole bunch of things. Like they need Taiwan because of the chips.
But, well, I'll get.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, no, we can say that now. Why not say that now? So, in most people might know that in Taiwan, they build sort of 80-90% of all the world's
semiconductors,
microchips, and semiconductors. Yeah. They're the best at it. It's not only have they cornered the market, but they are also technically the best at it, apparently.
Yeah.
Which I find is a tiny bit weird. It's like something from an Isaac Asimov novel or something. There's this planet.
Yes.
And there's this one country that's got one company in it that all the world fight over this one company. But there you go. So you can say something.
So here's the weird part. The machines that make the chips don't come from Taiwan. And the designs of the chips do not come from Taiwan either. But the actual fabrication of the chips is pretty much almost monopolized, 80-90% by Taiwan, especially for the highest high-end chips.
Mm.
So the smallest,
small
3-nanometer and 5-nanometer chips.
Mm. Mm.
So they make the best ones, but they don't design them, nor do they build the machines for them. And the machines are built by a Dutch company, the lithography machines, whereas the the designs are largely American. The Koreans are also a player, and now the Chinese are breaking into this market and are sort of developing their fully integrated capability to build everything from the machines down to the most advanced chips.
It doesn't make sense. There's a company, TSMC, it's called. Yep. And it just makes me think, when you hear about this, why haven't all the biggest players in the world, the US, China, even places like advanced places like France and Britain?
Yep.
Why don't, well, especially somewhere like America, you've got you've got tons and tons of money and research and development, and why would you rely on one Taiwanese company?
Yep.
But there you go, that's where we are at the moment.
Massive capex, I'd imagine.
In 2025, yeah, maybe.
Massive
well, yeah,
capex.
It is. But
when Biden tried to get them to move the chips, the chips manufacturing, he filled the bill in question with so much DEI BS that TSMC couldn't actually implement it. Mm. And it's a big hot mess.
So that's one element, perhaps a very crucial element, is the TSMC and the microchip thing. But let's see what Hegseth actually said.
You got it muted.
Credibly preparing to potentially be clear to all that Beijing is credibly preparing to potentially use military force to alter the balance of power in the Indo-Pacific. We know. It's public. That Xi has ordered his military to be capable of invading Taiwan by 2027. The PLA is building the military needed to do it, training for it every day, and rehearsing for the real deal.
Okay, he goes on in that vein, but you get the idea.
Yep.
So just to say, it's sort of been in the news a little bit, like everyone from the BBC on down. Imminent, it's an imminent threat. Imminent. I mean, I've been hearing this my whole life, more or less. But he said not till 2027, but it could be imminent. I mean, Al Jazeera saying there, China saying don't play with fire, bit of saber rattling there. Yeah, the Telegraph go with something. It's all over the news. Of course, the Guardian go with it's cowardice. Trump's cowardice. But still.
So this is something that I always find fascinating. The way in which the left and the far left have become the biggest warmongers. Mm. The idea that today saying, look, the Chinese are a great power. They're going to have their sphere of influence. Let's figure out a way to work around this. The Russians are a great power. Let's figure out how to work around their sphere of influence. That has become the right-wing position. Mm. And even the far-right Putin shill position, as people often get called. Whereas the leftist position is the existing liberal order, which only happened through a bizarre series of historic accidents, must be maintained even if we have to risk nuclear war.
Mm. So they're quite pro-nuclear war these days,
isn't it?
These days they're pro anything that destroys humanity, really. So there's been this shift in the discourse, and it's really incredible.
It honestly is, isn't it? Well, I mean, so just a couple of minutes, just talk about the people that might not know. Back in the 20s and 30s, the nationalists and the communists in China were fighting each other.
Yes.
World War II comes along. They decide eventually they have to make common cause and fight the Japanese. They do boot them out. I mean, the Japanese got nuked in 45. But then they go straight back to war with each other. And it's in 1949 when Mao wins.
Yes.
And that's when Chiang Kai-shek, the leader of the nationalists, retreats to Formosa, mm-hmm. the island of, or Taiwan, what we call Taiwan today. Okay, yes. And that's sort of, it's been that way ever since.
The origin of it. I didn't know the origin of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's the dissident Chinese. What, the more capitalist side, is it?
Well, yeah, Taiwan today is a democracy, a republic. Well, Chinese pretend they're a republic, but of course they're a one-party system. But in Taiwan, there is sort of a republic. It's got a democracy and stuff. And their open economy is booming. Relatively big.
They're not Han Chinese as well, are they?
Well, I don't know about the ethnicity.
They are very much Han Chinese as well.
Okay. I like to think of them as the real Chinese. They're Chinese. They're not Taiwanese, they're Chinese.
Yes.
The other ones on the mainland, they're commies. They're just the communists.
Their official name is Republic of China.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The name of Taiwan is the Republic of China, whereas China is what we call, is what refers to itself as the People's Republic of China. And whenever People's is inserted, then you know that it's a communist regime. In the same way that North Korea is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, whereas South Korea is just the Republic of Korea.
I'm a Taiwan stan. I stand for Taiwan. And ever since then, the Americans back in the 40s, 50s, 60s had big garrison on Taiwan. They pulled out in the 70s, I believe. But still, they say, you know, it's a cornerstone of American foreign policy that they will protect Taiwan with the Pacific Fleet if needs be.
It's not the official position. It's the implied position.
Right.
It's the implied position. Biden got into trouble for saying it.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
Biden got into trouble for saying it. The big issue is for the Japanese.
Well, we'll get into that in a sec, if that's all right. I'll just say, but to build on that point, to this day, even at the moment, in the last day or two, they sent the USS Nimitz, one of their big aircraft carriers, through the... I'm not sure if it's actually through the Straits of Taiwan, but they sent it to that area.
Right.
You know, a very, very clear message that we will use our navy if needs be. I think the HMS Prince of Wales also is in that part of the world as well. Mm. So I hope it doesn't happen. And if I had to put money on it, I don't think the Chinese will invade with boots on the ground Taiwan anytime soon. They might do it at some point. I mean, their line is, we want unification, whether peaceful or non-peaceful. That's sort of their line. But they're quite cautious in terms of having foreign adventures, aren't they, the CCP, in recent decades. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Let's just talk about what if it did happen and the global repercussions of it all. Because it wouldn't just be Chinese troops versus Taiwanese troops. It would very, very quickly spiral, wouldn't it? I mean, there's sort of no doubt about that. So just on the grandest level, first and foremost, talk about the South China Sea. And so most people that have paid any attention to the news over the last few years, we know that China is fairly aggressive or bellicose with extending its sphere of dominance in the South China Sea. So there's the Spratly Islands and the Paracel Islands. You can see them on a map. Look, there's the Paracel. That's Taiwan right there.
Who controls the Paracel Islands?
Increasingly, China has built up a bunch of military bases there.
Well, yeah.
But there are competing claims between the different countries.
They're coral islands. They're coral reefs. Yeah. They're not. It's not like big islands.
Have to make artificial islands to make them viable then.
Spratly Islands,
which
again,
they're making.
Not a million miles away. Because what you want is just enough to put an airstrip on it.
Yeah.
Then it's important at that point. Go on.
And if you shut down the South China Sea, I mean, that has much bigger implications because not only are you losing the semiconductors, you're losing the electrical supplies coming out of South Korea, which is vast, but also the implications for China are serious because they've got a hell of a lot of manufacturing in the South China. And if the South China Sea gets shut down and all those exports get shut down, you've got millions of Chinese flooding back into the cities that the Chinese are then going to have to deal with. So shutting down the South China Sea is no small thing.
So there's a couple of things here. From China's perspective, what they're doing is defending the main maritime route that they depend on for the supply of food and fuel. Right. They get their oil from the Middle East. They get food from pretty much all over the world. One of the key routes is the South China Sea. I think it was either Vietnam or the Philippines that started the game of claiming islands. And I think they began it in the late 70s. The Chinese took a while to get there. But when they did get there, they did it with such gusto and with such competence that it quickly became a huge issue.
Right.
Because they did it at a scale. Everybody else was claiming maybe one, maybe two islands. And then the Chinese just sort of built 10, 15 airstrips.
Mm.
And that's it.
One of them is Woody Island,
right?
Where they built it, I think, completely from scratch.
Yes,
it's like a sandbank essentially, and they build this on it with an airstrip. And so, on one level, you can sort of see, well, it's their backyard, in a way, right? America wouldn't have anyone else being involved in certain parts of the Atlantic seaboard, for example.
Yep.
So it's sort of it's China's sea in various ways. But from the point of view of the Pentagon, the State Department, the Chiefs of Staff, the President of the United States, all American foreign policy, they're not happy with it.
Yep.
Right? They're not happy with it. They see it as just straight up aggression.
Yep.
And so that's why they will send, because there's international waters.
Yeah,
a lot of it still. So the South China Sea is a gigantic bit of the Pacific. I mean, so you can sort of sail aircraft carriers around and say, no, you can't get annoyed at us, China. We're allowed to sail here.
Yep.
But China hate it.
Yes.
They hate it when the West, like Germany sent some battleships through there recently, very recently in the last few days sort of thing. Mm. Or the Nimitz is sailing around the South China Sea. They don't like it. So tension is certainly rising, or has been slightly pitched up a little bit since recently. But what Hegg said there, I think is really interesting, is that the Chinese military, in lots and lots of different ways, has been designed as if it's going to attack Taiwan.
Yes.
In lots and lots of different ways, and training for it. Because as I understand it, I've never been to Taiwan, but as I understand it, it would be quite a difficult place to say. It's quite mountainous. It's not easy terrain. It's not like southern France or Belgium or something. It would be quite a tough call. Mm. And the coastlines are not particularly easy. Oh, there's HMS Prince of Wales there. We're still going around pretending in the shadow of a much, much bigger bully.
Yes.
Poking our head round from behind him. Yeah. Do as you're told.
What is that even supposed to be? It looks like it's...
An aircraft carrier.
It's an aircraft carrier.
Well, that's an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, that's our aircraft. That's our preeminent aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Well, it's more that the American ones are gigantic. Like the Nimitz is ridiculously big. But in comparison, it's a lot smaller, isn't it? Yeah, a lot smaller. No doubt about that.
And the sort of aircraft carrier expect Belgians to have.
Work.
It doesn't work.
They tried to send one of the two to help police the Red Sea,
right?
And they couldn't do it.
Yeah,
and so it doesn't always work. Shall we put it this way? It doesn't always work,
right?
Which is slightly embarrassing.
Let's play this, but just without any audio. Just so there's some Chinese bombers and an AWACS plane, right?
Yep.
It's an AWACS plane up the top there, and just that picture. That's Woody Island, I believe. So again, the Chinese are sort of showing their hand. They know we'll have satellite. The Americans will have satellite imagery.
Yeah.
We'll put some big bombers out there, so. You know, it's the game that's being played.
Quick question, if I may, to you for us. In the first segment, we're talking about how there's this balance between the Russians and the US on the amount of strategic capability they have.
Yep.
Are China part of any of those?
Not yet. There has been talks about signing a treaty with China so that they also, the US, China and Russia all manage their nuclear capabilities together with a view towards having visibility,
But until that happens, China's just... can do what they want, really.
And they have a disadvantage in terms of number of nuclear weapons, but they are redesigning and upgrading those at a pace that is much faster than anyone else. So the Chinese nuclear capability is the only one that is growing extremely rapidly, but from a low base.
I see.
And it is going to end up becoming perhaps the most modern, or second only to Russia's in terms of the most modern. So this is a very, very dangerous game that's being played here.
And the Chinese have got a very good, pretty damn good missile program. I mean, they send stuff to the moon all the time, no problem.
And they have a base on the dark side of the moon.
They've sent loads of stuff to the dark side of the moon.
They have a base on and nobody knows what it is that they're doing. which seems to be an important detail. In terms of the weapons platforms that you can put there, you won't detect the launch, and you will only notice something coming your way through the atmosphere. Not certain if it's just some meteor that you didn't pick up on or an actual nuclear weapon. So this is a bit of a game-changing thing that's happening on the moon.
But so just to say that the Chinese Navy and their actual army... All sorts of weapon systems are all geared towards we might one day actually try and physically take Taiwan. We've got everything in our arsenal to do precisely that.
Well, there's an implication in that. If they're designing their military to fight for Taiwan, and Taiwan is defended by the US, they're basically saying we're designing our military to fight the US.
Which is also happening. If they're nowhere near there, I think they have 3 aircraft carriers, whereas the Americans have 11 nuclear and 8 non-nuclear. But the anti-ship missiles that they have are very impressive. Some argue that they can't actually hit a carrier with them. Mm. We've seen that if the Houthi can hit a ship with a drone,
then the Chinese will hit some ships.
So that was one of the things I was going to say. If it came to a limited war between the United States and China, let's not assume they're just going to carpet nuke each other's cities. It's a limited war over Taiwan and naval engagements in the South China Sea. I still think the US would win, like, fairly easily. The US Navy is a behemoth.
Yes.
It's unbelievably big.
Yes.
And powerful. So say one day we wake up and the Chinese have done this. They've used these sort of barges that with big bridges on them that could just sail up to almost anywhere on the coast of Taiwan and start unloading tanks and armored vehicles and thousands of men. We just wake up one morning and that's happening.
Yep.
And the Americans, I think of perhaps the British response to the Falklands. They take a couple of weeks or a month. They get the entire Pacific fleet or even more. They get like their Mediterranean or their Atlantic fleet. They get together and they do a giant armada of most of the US Navy.
Then
the Chinese can't stop that short of nuking it.
They'd start raining anti-ship missiles on these vessels.
But they've got defenses for that.
They've got some defenses for that, but the defenses almost got exhausted fighting the Yemenis, or there was a serious problem with the Yemenis. That's one side of it.
Fair
the
point.
Other side of it.
Fair point.
the other side of it is slightly more important. 50% of shipbuilding capability is today in China, and 0.0-something% in the United States, with the rest being mainly in South Korea and Japan. So the only three countries that are building ships today are China, South Korea, and Japan at volume. India has some, Vietnam, US, etc. Italy and Germany produce a lot of luxury yachts. But the sort of regular run-of-the-mill shipbuilding, the Chinese have an enormously dominant position.
All right.
And so if this becomes a long industrial war,
I was gonna say,
the Chinese have big advantages. And the closer you push Russia to China, the more of a problem you have, because one of them is a natural resource superpower and the other is a manufacturing superpower. So the only sensible policy is to try to separate them somehow.
From the United States point of view.
From each other. From the United States point of view and from Britain's point of view, as also an aspiring maritime power.
So I'd say there's two things there. There's one, if there was just a window of a couple of weeks of whatever China's got versus whatever the United States has got in terms of military navies.
Right.
Okay. In those terms, I feel like America wins. If it's a much longer protracted thing, then yeah, okay, so China has got a much bigger starting manufacturing base. But look what America did in World War II.
Yep.
They pumped out an insane navy.
Yes.
In a year or two.
Yeah.
Insane. They could do that again if they really wanted to. I don't see any of this happening, by the way.
Yes.
But if it did, we're just talking hypothetically, if China went all out to build the biggest, baddest-ass navy it could, and the United States did the same thing, I feel like the United States win again.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, say this happened, because this is interesting, isn't it, that they're very, very clearly...
Yeah,
these clearly want to invade Taiwan.
Yes.
If America, if one day the president and the State Department and the Pentagon said, we will not defend Taiwan, I feel like China would bounce across very quickly and take it.
I think what they would do first is a siege. It's a maritime siege.
So
this image is fascinating, because this is the various Chinese training exercises up to 2024.
It's
blatant, isn't it? It's so blatant.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder what they're practicing.
Yeah, right.
And so across from each of those patches is a major Taiwanese port. And the most important one is the port of Taipei in the north. And so if you blockade that, you blockade a lot of the ability to import energy. And they have a decent oil reserve, but they don't have a decent gas reserve. And they've decided to shut down their nuclear. Because why wouldn't you when you're at risk of
siege? That's what everyone does these days. Yeah. You shut down our nuclear.
So this was the single most insane policy that convinced a bunch of people that the Taiwanese aren't willing to fight.
So why on earth didn't the Chinese do this when Biden was in? Because that was their opportunity.
Well, Biden just went along with... he was an establishment puppet.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the establishment, or at least the sort of Pentagon, the State Department establishment, want to keep the status quo. So they're like, no, go over there and say what every president has always said. Like they sent, Kamala Harris did a visit, didn't she, to Taiwan? The CCP said, don't go over there. Don't do that. And she's like, I'm doing it anyway. I think Pelosi visited them. Maybe I'm thinking of Pelosi, actually.
Pelosi visited them, yes.
So it would, if the Chinese, again, we wake up one morning and the Chinese are invading Taiwan. It wouldn't just be the United States, as you say, then. It would be the Japanese would find it, and the South Koreans would find it difficult to not get involved.
Yes.
Quite quickly on some level.
Yep.
And then just the geopolitical thing, the Russians, how and to what extent are they going to stick their oar in?
Yep.
It would become, if not like a World War II style, World War III, total war, if not that, it would be a giant conflict quite quickly, well,
The US have a major naval base in Manila, which is not far south of Taiwan.
Yeah, right. Well, the story of the Americans and the Philippines. How storied is that?
Yes.
MacArthur.
Yes.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say I'll be back. What did he say? I will return, I think it was. But yeah, the Americans and the Philippines. Again, it's one of the American pillars of their foreign policy, of their sort of their entire world hegemon.
Yes.
Is that no one mucks with the Philippines on our watch.
Mm.
And whether they'll sort of, if the Chinese did do this in 2027 or whenever, what would the Americans, if the Chinese called the Americans bluff, said, no, we're taking Taiwan, look, we're doing it, it's happening.
Yeah.
What would Trump and Rubio and Hegseth do? Would they, do you think they would get together, would 8 aircraft carriers?
Would they kick off the war to defend Taiwan?
I don't know. It'd be interesting. Mm. It would be interesting. It's maybe not
one way
really
to
reindustrialize,
yes.
So there's just the implications of this could be big. And I think Xi, not that I really know the mind of Xi Jinping, but he does sometimes still talk about the century of humiliation, the 19th century.
Yes.
Where the rest of the powers in the world, United States, Russia, Britain.
It was mainly France, Britain doing the humiliation.
Yeah.
Everybody ended
the Opium Wars. Yeah, the Opium Wars.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're way, that's long gone now, but still, that we just, they won't have anyone else in the world tell them their business.
Yes.
That if we want to take Taiwan, we're going to do it.
Yes.
That does seem to be his mind, sort of his headspace,
yes,
where he is, and the fact that they consider it just sort of a renegade province sort of thing, don't they? That's what they consider it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this, and all those barges with bridges on them, landing, trying to perfect the art of beach landings and stuff. It's a bit ominous. Like what Hegseth said, my point is what Hegseth said there isn't pointless saber rattling from the United States.
No.
I don't think it's just sensationalism. I think there's a real thing there.
These kinds of training exercises, the idea is to say to Taiwan that we can choke you off, you're better off submitting peacefully.
Mm. Mm.
You're better off just accepting that you're part of China, whether you like it or not. The alternative is a war that puts you in the same position as Ukraine. Because the Taiwanese economy can't function if the Chinese want it to stop functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And because the amount of damage that they can do in just terms of switching off the electricity, in terms of endless drone warfare, in terms of just constant bombardment and harassment, is going to be very...
The softly, softly approach probably would have worked better if they had actually respected Hong Kong's autonomy more. So the Taiwanese know what's going to happen to them if they come along peacefully.
It's not like the Chinese are like invincible, though.
No.
I mean, you talk about drone strikes. What about a big drone on the Three Gorges Dam?
You can't bring down something as big as the Three Gorges Dam.
Well, you wouldn't think so, but...
I mean, militarily, I think just think about the difficulty that the Allies had in terms of destroying dams in the Second World War. Yes, there's a solution to it.
The dam busters.
Yes.
Squadron 617. Yeah, no, they were quite successful. They blew up a couple of dams, no problem.
Did, but the size of that thing is so monumental.
Mm. Yeah.
That the number of attempts that you have to make against it is just insane.
The nature of dams, though, particularly that one, is that the pressures are so huge that you need only put a crack in it and the billions of tons of water do the rest for you. But anyway, talking about dam busting, perhaps just for another day.
Yeah, right.
I would happily talk all about the physics of dam busting.
Fair enough.
In fact, I did a bit of content about that recently.
Okay.
And the superconductor thing. So All right, there's just that, just a bit of an update on Taiwan, and that it could be a flashpoint. In fact, at some point in the future, it probably will be a flashpoint, I would think. I hope it's. I hope to be proven wrong. I hope that last statement is dates terribly. Yeah. But I fear it won't.
Do you want to pick out one or two of the comments before we move on?
Yeah, all right then. So let's see. It's flashing up and down for me. Arizona's TSMC plant will supply 40%+ of chips in the world, and I think I read about an expansion beyond this.
When it starts operating.
Right.
When it gets built and starts operating, but there's been problems with that, yes.
Okay. I remember watching a video about Taiwan's plan if the CCP invades. Basically, it would involve airstrikes against the Three Gorges Dam, killing hundreds of millions. Thoughts? Yeah, that would be a disastrous thing. Yeah, it'd be horrible. Yeah, millions and millions of people would be swept away. Bo, I think you're forgetting drone warfare, in particular USVs, unmanned surface vehicles. Ukraine has made a lot of them and taken out a lot of the Russian Navy. Yeah, there are naval... Yeah, there's a whole world of naval drones.
Yes.
Yeah, no, good point. But again, both sides would be doing that.
Yeah.
If it came to an extended naval war between the Chinese and the Americans, well, both sides would be doing it then.
Yeah.
Okay, so should we move on? There were a few more comments, I'm afraid, but we have to move on. Sorry about that.
So we have the rather interesting case of Keir Starmer and roguish good looks, boyish, pretty young boys who appear to have some grudge against him. We don't know why. It's a bit of a mystery. You can speculate. I did a daily video on this, trying to get to the bottom of why it is that these very pretty young men.
No pun intended.
Yes,
get into the bottom of it.
None at all. As to why they have this enormous grudge against the Prime Minister and how they seem to know where he was living. And what car he was driving only a few years ago.
That was the very first thing I thought. They said it was some flat in North London somewhere. And I'm like,
yes.
I thought that would be a secret, like a sort of a state secret.
I don't know where the Prime Minister lives. But
well, there's a flat live, for that matter.
But these pretty young boys do.
Because there's a flat above number 10 and you've got checkers.
Oh, I know about 10 Downing Street.
But where he used to live.
Yes.
Yeah, who know who would...
Anyway. As well as his car, a RAV4 Toyota.
Yes.
They found out about which car he had previously. Mm. And they found two of his properties, not one, which suggests a long-term association, shall we say?
Mm. That, or just MI5 told them.
Or someone told them. Some intelligence.
Ukrainian intelligence services.
But they are all Ukrainian.
Them. That is odd, isn't it?
Yes.
That's odd. Yeah. All of them.
What are I think there might be one Romanian or something.
Romanian citizenship, originally Ukrainian.
Oh, okay. So they're all Ukrainian.
So Ukrainian. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And are they, I know it's a bit of a sensitive, perhaps the most sensitive thing, but are they male prostitutes?
Oh, goodness, but we couldn't possibly.
Are we honestly not allowed to?
What they are is male models, and there are apps that you can go on where if you're sat around on a Saturday night, you've had a bottle of wine, and you just suddenly realise that what you need right now is a male model because you've got a watch that needs a male model.
Okay.
You can go on this app and you can summon a male model to you at short notice if you need.
Ah, at short notice.
You need some modelling. Yes.
Yeah. If you need some modelling
at home in your home.
Yes. Okay. So and it appears that we know that some of these very, very pretty young men.
I don't know. The middle one's a bit rough, isn't he?
Not to your taste.
That looks like an ugly person, if you ask me.
Well, maybe it's just a bad shot. Okay. I don't know. maybe it's, I don't know.
It's all very short term, so you sort of, on short notice, you...
Right.
There is a photo of what he looked like.
Maybe get a discount.
There is a photo of what he looked like when Keir Starmer was living in the other property, and he was a lot more boyish. Very Owen Jones-ish. He looked like. Yes. So maybe while they were going to male modelling jobs, because presumably they were busy, because they're very pretty. So maybe they were busy going to and fro all these male modelling jobs. And whilst walking the streets of London, they saw Keir Starmer coming out of a house and going into a car. Maybe that's how they know.
Just happened to see.
Yes.
And his foreign policy isn't good enough for them from the Ukrainians. So they're taking revenge.
Oh, I presume it's the...
Doesn't make any sense, does it? None of this adds up.
It is very odd.
It doesn't
I'll
add up.
Even stranger is that nobody in the media is asking about this.
Well, that's funny, isn't it?
That these guys would be on these apps, would know where the prime minister lives.
Yes.
And would have enough reason. I mean, it seems one of them was the arsonist and the others were accomplices. These are the allegations so far.
Right.
We don't know that for a fact, but these are the allegations. But then, what exactly is the nature of the relationship? Was this an intelligence operation by a foreign adversary that decided that there is a strategic importance to an old RAV4? Or to a property in which he no longer lived?
Yeah.
Or was this personal? Or was this... Anyway.
Yes.
That's a very good question. Like, what did they think? They probably, I would have thought, I'm guessing, weren't trying to actually assassinate him. So what are you doing? Why are you burning up his old car or a car that he's not in or anywhere near? So you're sending a message.
I'm sure these young men have. Well, actually, didn't Keir Starmer said that he knew one of them. He played cards with one of them or something.
What?
I don't know. Maybe that's something I heard. But maybe
a senior. Yes. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
But maybe I'm sure Keir Starmer has probably never met, you know, these very pretty young men. But if intelligence services had any compromat, I'm sure that, you know, it wouldn't be in their interest to use it. But maybe it might be in somebody else's interest to get the story to come to light. I don't know.
There's some 4D chess going on
We have to speculate wildly because the mainstream media has decided that they can't talk about this for whatever reason.
It might be a D notice. Do you know about D notices?
Yes.
Do you think maybe that's going on? That's why the mainstream media is just not saying anything.
Yes. But we're not covered. We have.
Yeah, no one's been in contact with us, have they?
So
no one's emailed us.
Yeah, we can say whatever we like. until we get arrested anyway. But very odd. And these three pretty young chaps, for some reason are involved in this way. And there's a fourth man.
The fourth man.
The fourth, here we go. Fourth man arrested over fires at homes linked to the Prime Minister. So what does this say? A fourth man has been arrested over a series of fires connected to the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. The police have said. So he's an arsonist as well. He's a Ukrainian as well.
Whoa.
Is it Petro Potronok?
No, that's not him. That's the previous one. We don't know what his nationality is.
No, I'm pretty sure this one is Ukrainian as well. I read it somewhere. I don't know. Maybe I'll come back to them. But I got the impression the other one was Ukrainian as well. But maybe I could be wrong at that. So the last line here says the other fire took place on May 11th at the front door of a house converted into flats that was presumably associated with the Prime Minister. I mean, I do hope that the...
I think his sister-in-law was living there. I might have that wrong, but I heard somewhere, read somewhere that... Yes. Anyway.
But I do hope the front door of the Prime Minister is safe, and I hope that the back door of the Prime Minister is safe from these very pretty young men.
No comment.
The Prime Minister's doors should not be violated in any way. You know, that is important. So anyway, for multiple reasons, and we don't want to be arrested, so we move swiftly on.
A man's front and back door is his own private kingdom, sir. Should Damn defend it. It with his life. It's super, super weird. It's super, super weird.
Yes.
That whatever it is, even if it is just some sort of to do with his personal life, even if it's just as simple as that,
yes.
Talk about the Profumo affair. This is actually bad. They're firebombing stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, it's proper, proper criminal things. It's not just a disgrace. It's not just embarrassing, personally. Yes. It's actually...
I can't
crimes are happening.
I have a feeling there's going to be a huge amount of trouble in getting the documents for the trial.
Yes. What are they going to say?
What are they going to charge them with exactly? Yep. In addition to the existing charges, what are they going to say? Mm. Will any of them take the witness stand?
Yes.
Because
somebody's going to ask, how did you know the Prime Minister? And maybe the Prime Minister...
How will their defense lawyer argue their case?
Yes.
Because one of them is 21, and Keir Starmer has been Prime Minister for a year. And in some of these properties, he hasn't been involved for about several years.
So if you do the maths,
that 21-year-old would have been 17.
Yes.
And so there are ridiculous questions around this.
Yes.
That
what, the why would the Prime Minister need a 17-year-old male model? If indeed he knows him. We don't know.
Yes. The media should be salivating over this. The Times should be all over this. The Telegraph should be all over this, let alone the sort of other media outlets.
It is bizarre.
And we hear nothing?
I presume they haven't covered it as much as we haven't covered it on the basis that we don't want to be arrested, because Keir Starmer basically just arrests people who he doesn't like. And this one, I mean, you don't have to think about it too long before you start thinking, oh, maybe there's something a little bit suspicious going on here. And
it is obviously straight off the bat odd. It's the only way of saying it, right? Doesn't add up.
I was going to disagree with you when you said it's obviously straight, but you went on.
Okay.
Yes. Anyway, so for this reason, I've taken a look at the betting odds for the year that Keir Starmer is replaced. Now, he's still favourite to leave after the next election, but the odds are narrowing of him leaving sooner. And for that reason, you know, we have to think about, okay, well, who is going to replace him? And here's Betfair with their betting odds of who's going to replace him.
Who's fave? Where's Streeting? Oh, my God. Imagine Prime Minister Streeting.
Well, I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do some top trumps on the possible alternatives? So I have put together, this is what I spent my morning doing, Labour top trumps. I'll whiz through these. I don't want to spend too long on it, but I'll whiz through these, and you can tell me if you think we're sort of on the mark here. So I've done a card for Keir Starmer here.
Those numbers out of 10?
Out of 5.
Oh, out of 5, okay.
All yes. Right. So he is experienced, because he's head of the CPS, he's a barrister, he's been Prime Minister for a while now, so he's got experience. Intellect, for Labour. These are all for Labour.
Okay.
You know, he's reasonably smart. I mean, he lacks imagination. Charisma, he doesn't have any.
None.
Probably should have given him 0.
I think you should have included soul there and then given him a negative number.
Yeah. Yes, could have done that. Yeah, leftism, he's a communist. So he's actually quite lefty as they go, even within Labour.
Mm. Yeah.
So that gives us our baseline. And so this is Wes Streeting, the health secretary. The problem with Wes, right, is look at that majority, 500.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's tiny.
Yeah.
That's really small. He could lose his seat next time. Easy peasy.
Yep.
Yes. Almost certainly he's going to lose his seat.
What is his constituency out of interest?
Don't
worry about it if you don't have it.
No, I can look it up.
I wonder if
Ilford North.
Ilford?
Yes. You know that one?
Yeah. That's East London, Essex. That's my manor.
Oh, right, okay.
A massive Muslim population, in other words.
Oh, okay.
Or foreign, at least foreign, might be Indian and Bangladeshi, but...
Right.
Yeah, so that could easily flip to...
So he's almost 100% going to be replaced by an Islamist MP next time.
Quite possibly Ilford.
Right.
Okay.
Ilford's like Delhi.
Right.
Anyway, well, I've made the point.
Delhi's Hindu, isn't it?
I've made the point.
Okay.
Yeah, subcontinent.
He's that bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's the favourite, but you know, I think we can rule him out, even though he has got a little bit of charisma and he can talk to camera, and all that kind of stuff. Yvette Cooper, very experienced. She's been a cabinet minister under Blair and Brown. She's been around. Reasonably smart as a Labour goes. Mm. Not much in the way of charisma, this one.
Mm. She's looking more and more demon-like.
Yes. She's married to Ed Balls, isn't she?
The inner demon is become more and more visibly obvious.
Yes. Yes. She's got a decent majority of 6,000, so she could probably survive.
It's not great, 6,000. So
back in the day, a small majority was under 20,000, but these days,
right,
it's a bit more competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah, 15, 20 years ago, I'd say 6,000 is decent. But not now. You could flip 6,000.
Yes.
6,000 could be flipped.
Well, yeah, but not a lot of people have much better than that. I mean, we see how we go on some of them.
Okay,
but she's got fairly low odds. Only you know, you make £12 on a pound bet on her. So
also, I'd say she's a big beast, like a party grandee. That counts for a lot, right?
Yes.
So it's also about how much, what sort of block of supporters you can get within the parliamentary party, right?
Yes.
So someone like Yvette Cooper, I think, I've got no special insight, but I think someone like Yvette Cooper will be able to get a bigger number of supporters within the party than someone like Wes Streeting.
Yes, that's true.
I would have thought.
Yeah, I think she's a credible candidate on a number of
points. Yeah, yeah.
This is Dr. Nima Parvini's top pick, Angela Rayner.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I've got a broken
leftism nomics. A score of five, a score of four. She should be, on a scale of five, she should be a six, no?
Yeah, and you've given her an intellect of two. Why are you simping? She's a zero, obviously. She's a full-blown stupid person, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's common, so therefore she talks, you know.
I'm common.
You know, us Labours, our care, that kind of stuff.
Like her political acumen, her ability to debate, all those sorts of things are non-existent.
I'll tell you why I gave her a two, is because she's smart. She's not one of those stupid people who think she's clever. She's one of those stupid people who realises she's stupid and knows when to shut up.
Credit
and she has
that.
Been doing that.
Fair point.
And that was basically Parvini's argument, is that she's like now the creature of the Dark Lord. Mm. So, you know, she kind of falling into line with that. She has got charisma, though.
If you're into that kind of stuff,
right?
Yes.
Right.
If you're willing, yes.
Yeah. If you're working class, you think she's a proper.
Right? I don't find her charismatic at all, but I get what you mean. Some people will.
Yes.
Some people will.
Apparently, this played well. Her going to Ibiza and throwing up a Roman to Auslander Rouse or whatever it was that they were playing.
Auslander Rouse. Is that what she's like?
I don't think.
Okay.
It was. But anyway, whatever track they were playing.
I thought this was one of the most cringeworthy things ever. I found that you're really throwing your political dignity down the toilet.
It worked for the Finnish Prime Minister for a while until it stopped.
Yeah, until it doesn't.
Oh, she was tasty, wasn't she? Was it the Finnish? Yes.
Again, the majority not that gigantic. And she's in an Islamist area as well, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually, no, she was the one who was begging for
Pakistanis for their votes, yes.
And actually, yeah, she might lose that as well. And she's Deputy Prime Minister, so you know, she's
quite a scoff.
She's credible. She's got low odds. Andy Burnham, he's not an MP. He's the mayor of Manchester, and he's doing pretty well in that. So they'd need to shoehorn him into a seat.
Mm.
But he's got executive experience. He's reasonably smart as a socialist goes. He's
been
got
around for a long time.
Yeah, he's got some. I wouldn't say maybe I'm being a bit generous on charisma, but he can talk to camera. He can do the thing. You know, he can do the. He won't ever come across as charismatic, but he could do the serious statesman type stuff.
He could do the Teflon Dave Cameron thing of appearing bulletproof.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think he's a credible candidate. Who else have we got? Oh, Rachel Reeves, ugh. The woman,
the woman who wrecked the British economy single-handedly.
I mean, she is wildly out of her depth. She should be running the finances for a bathroom fitters in Dagenham or something, not Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yeah. Although decent majority there. Yeah. The 12,000 is. She'll probably keep her seat next time. Probably, you would have thought.
If they get stuck with her, it would be hilarious. If sort of all of the big names that Labour have, she ends up being the one that sort of survives.
Yes.
It would be quite funny.
There are some even funnier, but I do take your point. Yeah.
I feel like you're being generous with the charisma again.
Hmm.
Like, I don't see... Again, she's like an annoying mid-level HR Karen.
They are scaled.
How is that a charisma
three?
They are
scaled for Labour.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Everything's
all
scaled right. for Labour.
Fair enough.
I'll give you.
Fair enough.
I didn't know who this woman was.
Yeah, who? Who the fuck is that guy? Who is that? I don't know. Honestly, don't know.
Education Secretary.
She's the Al Equity. Okay.
She's got reasonably low odds, 30-1.
I'm not sure I've ever heard of her before. That's telling, isn't it?
Doesn't she have something to do with a women's portfolio as well?
Oh, probably. I don't know.
Oh, wait, I have. Didn't
she get struck by a very unfortunate case of blindness and deafness that led her to completely not hearing about the Pakistani rape gangs?
Oh, one.
Yeah. I have.
Is that not her?
I have seen her come up before a couple of times. Yeah, she is also, again, sort of an intellect and charisma vacuum type person. Just obviously a career party person and nothing else.
Right.
Mm. But she hasn't got name recognition, right? No, what most people...
I didn't know who she was.
Right.
So, and I follow politics quite closely.
Right, yeah.
So there's that. Who was it? Darren Jones. He's got reasonable odds. I mean, not These are not the tightest, but they're contenders. And he's apparently chief secretary to the Treasury, which I think is what Rishi Sunak was before being propelled to Chancellor. So it's a route for people that they like.
I've seen him talking on TV before, and he's it's that classic professional politician robot thing of towing the party line, never answering a question straight, just answering a different question. Just all that nonsense, just the same
very
old...
Very much in the mould, then.
Just, yeah.
Yes.
Just the same old crap.
Right. But apparently he's got a tech background. He was like the lawyer for BT or something. But
okay.
Well, great.
They're all lawyers. I mean, they're all either trade unionists or lawyers. Lisa Nandy.
Oh, God.
She
only just eaten. Don't.
Well, she looks like the sort of woman who would cause a scene in a restaurant. I mean, I wouldn't want to be sat... I wouldn't want to be sat next to her table because she's going to pick a fight with somebody or the waiter or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unkind.
I honestly won't go into any detail about my feelings about Lisa Nandy. Suffice to say, I find her a despicable person.
Right.
On many, many levels. An actual fifth columnist type.
Right.
Yes, fair enough. David Lammy.
God.
Is the best outcome not a David Lammy versus Kemi Badenoch general election?
It would be the funniest thing to happen.
Yes.
It would be hilarious. And I would pay to see that debate. I don't care what... I would buy tickets for that debate. I would do anything to see that debate. It would be the funniest thing. I don't think any of them could form a cogent thought and run with it. Remember when David Lammy thought that the black smoke coming out of the Vatican was racist?
Yeah.
How could you forget? Like, you also went on Celebrity Mastermind and got the lowest score that had ever been recorded.
Some of the answers on that, anyone look it up?
Yeah.
On his general knowledge, it was like a comedy sketch.
It really was.
It was sort of beyond embarrassing. If the tactic of the globalists, or whoever you want to say, the cabal that's trying to destroy the West, if their strategy really is one of humiliation, to humiliate us,
by
putting someone like a dementia-riddled Biden in charge,
yes.
to give us Lammy, to force Lammy on us, I would really buy that more, that it is a strategy of humiliation. Yeah. I talk about Rayner being just a straight-up stupid person. Lammy is...
Oh, he's extra stupid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's super, super low IQ. No general knowledge of the world. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating enough that he's the head of the FCO. Prime Minister...
A few years ago, he was going on about how there were no police officers on the street.
I remember that, yeah.
Which was a legitimate complaint, and there was one behind him.
Yeah, right there.
Who was actually not there for him. He was sort of doing his beat. And this guy is just unfortunate.
Just one last time to say, anyone, go out there and Google, YouTube him on Celebrity Mastermind.
I watched it this morning. It is quite funny. But, right, he's got reasonable odds and he's got a decent majority, so he'd be sticking around. So he is actually a proper contender. Shabahan Mahumad. You might have a
Shabana Mahmood.
Right, yes.
Yeah. She was an unknown until this government came in, really.
Right.
She became the Justice Secretary and is responsible for things like all of the things that you see that are going on with the justice system. That falls under her remit and that of nice Mr. A.G. Harmer.
The fallout from the Southport stuff
comes across her desk. Grooming gangs inquiry not happening, that would be
Very
also, she was the first female Muslim MP, apparently.
Is that right?
Interesting.
Again, the majority not particularly healthy.
No. Not a good majority at all.
Healthy.
No great charisma. So she's
65-1 odds. That's sort of really.
This person is apparently on the. This one surprised me because
she hasn't even got the whip.
Doesn't she? Did she lose the whip?
I think she did. Yeah, I think she.
Did she?
I might be wrong, but I thought right in day one, Starmer took it away from a bunch of people. I think she was one of them.
For a long time, I thought that she was a parody account. Because there is a Twitter account which basically uses a porn star's face and gives it an MP's and says MP after the name.
Right.
As a parody account.
Okay.
And I just mentally mixed up Zara Sultana with that account for ages. And at some point I realised, oh, no, actually, that's a real MP.
Yep.
But she has a very strong social media presence, and the young leftists love her.
Yeah.
So she scores well on charisma and leftism. But I didn't know she'd lost the whip, so...
I might be wrong, but the charisma thing, I mean, maybe even geared towards Labour people,
yes,
and even in other people's eyes, still, I don't find her charismatic. She's really obnoxious.
Mm. Yes.
She's really, really obnoxious.
And I don't suggest that she does her hair like that again, because she's done that thing where she's pulled her ponytail so tight that she just looks permanently surprised.
I mean, she's got the opposite. If I've got a receding hairline, she's got a preceder.
Yes. Very little room left for the face on the head.
Again, a fifth columnist, straight up enemy of the people, enemy of the state, essentially, I would argue.
Yes.
Disgusting person.
But she makes the Betfair list, and it's not wild odds, 130. I mean, it's up there. But it's
are they odds from the betting site, or ones you've
no, oh, that's
you've
from,
made up?
No, from here we go.
It is from Betfair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I just took the whatever's in that column.
Fair enough. No, fair enough. So someone seriously has looked at it and tried to calculate the okay.
Oh no, he's not. That would be the arbitrage between backers and layers.
Between, sorry, say again?
The people backing it and laying it. So
yeah. Okay.
So that would just be the arbitrage out between them.
Okay.
Jess Phillips. Now, this would be the funniest outcome, because Carl would have to move to somewhere without an extradition treaty. you know Carl and her have a bit of background.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Carl moves to Buenos Aires.
They used to date. No, not really. It was something else. The point is, right, if she comes in, Carl has to leave the country.
She's not going
to
make it.
She's totally losing her seat next time. I thought her majority was even smaller than that, but she's going to lose her seat next time.
Yes.
Unless the party move her around, can they just do that?
They can.
I think they can just do that.
They can do whatever they want in turn. They allocate the seating based on whether or not central headquarters likes you.
All right, yeah. You do get people parachuted into somewhere.
This is how Keir Starmer ended up parachuted into Holborn, right?
All right. Yeah. Okay.
It's there's a more of a bias against doing it when you've already got a seat.
Yeah,
they do sometimes do it, yeah.
Again, charisma 4 out of 5, are you sure? Who thinks that?
Socialists. This is scaled for Labour.
Okay.
Socialists.
Let's run with it. Let's run with it.
Well,
fair enough.
Right,
this is a probably more credible candidate, actually. Sadiq Khan. He's the Mayor of London, so he's not an MP. But again, they could just parachute him into a safe seat, short notice. Loads of experience. He's actually quite smart. I mean, he's evil and he represents, you know, the wrong people and all that kind of stuff. And he's a fifth columnist, and he's all about complete demographic replacement, but he is smart, and he's therefore dangerous.
Yeah.
His charisma is strong. For socialists, he can do very well on camera. He's very good on interviews and stuff like that. He's pretty leftist. The reason I only put him up to 3 is because actually at some point his leftism veers into tribalism, but not for the British tribe.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So,
His socialism is all just a front for...
It really is.
Tribalism.
It very obviously is. If you look at the X account of Muslim Labour, you'll see a near perfect overlap between the most leftist positions and the most pro-Islamist positions, and they sort of use that very, very effectively, and he's the guy who's mastered that game.
Yes. Mm. But I think he is probably one of the strongest, most credible candidates, so I think his odds are a bit high there, 65. I might back that just to... just because I think there's something in the odds there.
Why not put your money where your mouth is? Bung 20 quid on Sadiq Khan to be PM.
But maybe I will. Maybe
to
I will.
Be leader of the Labour Party, not necessarily PM.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you think it's going to happen before the next election, I suppose that's by default. I had to mention he's another credible candidate, David Miliband. David Miliband. I put his brother up on the left so you wouldn't confuse. So this is always funny for me, right? So these two are brothers. They're both big beasts in the Labour Party. David is smart, urbane, good interviewer. Calculating, serious contender, and his brother is an absolute prat, right? And these two went up for Labour leader, and Labour chose Ed over David.
Yeah.
Well, it's because of the odd way they did it, right? You could have a second vote and a third vote, and you tally it all up, and he just pipped him.
Because the trade unionists wanted Ed.
Yeah.
He's more lefty. And at that point, David was like, sod this, and he left, and he became something big at Facebook, and now he runs, what does he run?
International in America, Rescue. Yeah.
So would these be the guys bringing boats, or?
I think they're the Thunderbirds, aren't they?
Oh.
International, I don't know.
But David Miliband, yeah, I mean, he's, again, got that Teflon thing about him. He was Foreign Secretary, wasn't he, for a while? Mm-hmm. He's been around ever since the Blair years. But I think, I might be wrong, of course. Don't know what's going on in his life, but I think he's ruled out ever coming back to frontline politics.
Quite possibly. I mean, he'd be earning more money.
Because Ed is in the cabinet right now, right?
Yes.
And David isn't even an MP.
I mean, it is bizarre.
Yeah.
So he would need to be parachuted back. I think he's got quite tight odds given that mainly the thing that you said, that he doesn't want to come back. Yeah. It's been quite clear that he's making a lot more money and having an easier life outside of politics. Mm. But I probably wouldn't back that one.
But he's also a bloody red. He's not like he is a full blown. Their family are Marxists.
Yeah. Right.
So it's not like David Miliband will come back and we'll have a good government.
No, he's less left wing than his brother, but still scaled for Labour. Yeah. And then I just thought I'll throw in one for why not throw in one for Kemi just to show her odds. She's 11.5. I put her leftism down at 1.
I didn't know her majority was so small.
Yep.
Mm. Didn't know that. Should have known that. Wow, okay.
So her odds are 11.5 compared to the Nige. His odds are only 3.3. He's got very low odds of being the next Prime Minister.
Very high odd. Never mind.
Whichever way.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a decent bet. I mean, not even get much. We won't get much back for your money, but...
Yep. Decent majority as well, especially given it was an outsider party. Mm. I put his leftism down to 0. Again, this is scaled for Labour because he's basically just a centrist who doesn't challenge any of the assumptions of the left-wing paradigm.
Mm. Yeah.
So I left him at 0, which is to say, you know, a lot left-wing by Labour standards, but still dirty, dirty centrist. Mm. He is very charismatic. You've got to give him that.
Interesting with the Movember clash going on in that picture.
Yeah. Indeed. He's pretty smart. And he's experienced. I mean, not in Westminster, perhaps, but, you know, he's been in politics for a long, long time. Mm. So I had to put his experience up, and he's got a decent majority, so that's good.
I mean, that is the thing about his charisma. Personally, I have thrown shade at Nige a whole load of times, but you cannot deny his charisma, his ability to speak. Yes. It cannot be denied. I went to the Reform Conference, 2 years ago or 3 years ago? And people are up there, even some of the other big people, like Tice and stuff, they get up and they talk and it's interesting. And Widdicombe, da 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 da. Nige comes in and there is a little bit of electric.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he does work the crowd a bit.
Yep.
Yes.
he's very effective at that.
Got to give him that.
So before I close off, the granddaddy of them all, this is Base Stop Trump's Rupert Lowe, experience 5, long business career, city banker, chairman of Southampton FC, led multiple financial and agricultural businesses before entering politics, intellect 5, sharp as a tack, this guy, charisma 5, leftism minus 5.
Boom. I didn't know his majority was that small either. I knew it wasn't big, but that is actually pretty tight.
Well, I mean, he wasn't expected to win. He wasn't supposed to win, but, you know, he got through anyway. And actually, his majority will be a lot bigger next time.
I hope so. I think so.
Oh, almost
certainly. Very good constituency MP.
Yeah, everyone says that.
He's been a very good constituency MP. That seems to be the consensus.
And his odds are surprisingly low. I mean, look at that, 42. I mean, that's lower than some of the people who are actually in the cabinet now.
Yeah.
So that is decent. So we leave that there. Have a quick look at any questions. Alexander Adam says, I can't read that because we will get arrested. T-Tone says, excellent segments this morning. This America appreciates you all. Thank you.
Thanks
very much. Archbishop of Domes, there was an arsonist at the PM's residence and the press can't be asked to ask any penetrating questions. This is barely propped up in the mainstream media. What a queer situation. Yes, it is very odd. I'm a bit confused. I don't know what's going on there.
How queer.
Right, okay. Have we got any of the video comments? The videos?
Did we do video comments today?
Somebody wake Samson up. Have we got the videos?
All right.
Oh, have we got something else to do? We should read some comments. Can we read some comments? Okay, right. Okay, let's go to the comment bit. Do you want to read some from yours? Are you
sure?
Pick out two or three that you like.
Very good. Baron von Warhawk, just because of the name. If I had to guess what's happening now, I'm going to say that Russia is not going to listen to any calls for a ceasefire, correct? And will accept nothing but unconditional surrender now. Yeah. As this is the second time there was talk about the ceasefire and they used it to strike Russia. One thing we can all agree on is that the war will continue. Yeah, more or less. More or less. Gabriel Syme, the drone operation is perhaps more valuable to Ukraine as a statement than the actual strategic results. Yes, good point. They have needed to prove for a while now that they are capable of fighting back to try and boost their own morale and dissuade NATO backers. It's not a lost cause. The impact on the battlefield itself seems minimal, however, so I would expect that the borders will continue to slowly shrink west in addition to whatever reprisals Putin comes up with. Yeah, very much in agreement. Yep.
Do you want to do some of them?
Yeah, just a quick one to say on your segment. Bleach Demon said, Bo, you are thinking of the M2829 Davy Crockett nuclear weapon system developed in 1961. Yeah, that's that bazooka. It's a nuclear bazooka.
It does sound quite cool, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, Flashpoint Taiwan. Let's see. Alan Fisher says, if you were to try to build a chip fabrication facility from the ground up, it would take years just to get the infiltration system for the air and standards needed to allow production. Right, I get that you don't build Rome in a day. Let's read a short one. Captain Charlie the Beagle says, well, if I for one can't wait to see Taiwan take back control of mainland China. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. No,
I'll back that.
Chiang Kai-shek, let's go. And Pieter Harvey says, if Taiwan truly falls, the West might carpet bomb all of its factories to ensure China doesn't get any of its technology. I have heard that as a one thing, that, yeah, if China invaded Taiwan, maybe America would flatten the that factory facility. It's up in the north near Taipei, just so the Chinese don't get their hands on it. I mean, it's not a crazy tactic. Anyway.
Yep. Dan and Dank sweatily rolling around the ring says, would you think that if it bleeds, it leads is true, sensationalism drives the news cycle, then the papers would be all over the Starmer story. Funny that this also applies to the Saville and Epstein cases. I don't see the connection. Why on earth would they not want to publish such important and profitable stories? Colin P says,
I like that.
Yes. I've seen it suggested that these attacks on two-tier Stalin's properties may be part of the apparent drive for war with Russia. Oh, yes, the Telegraph put out a story saying that Russia was behind these Russian, these Ukrainian male models.
What's the angle on that?
So they weren't able to find one, and they did say in the article, we haven't got any evidence for this, but it's Russia.
Right.
But there you go.
So again, what's the angle though? How does that make, who does that benefit?
It's just Russia.
Don't ask.
Okay, all right, okay, got it. Right.
It's just Russia. You have to accept it. Okay. Right. You stop complaining.
And Sophie Liv says, I'm going to be honest, I don't really see the attractiveness of these guys. Right, well, okay, let me explain it to you, Sophie. First of all, you are a lady, and I think you're a lady that likes gentlemen. I don't think that these pretty young men are going after...
You're not the intended audience.
Yes, your intended market. So that's one thing. Second, the photos are them now. You want to think about how they looked 4 or 5 years ago when they were much more boyish. Very boyish. She also goes on to say, well, I always go watch lotuseaters.com for my eye candy. So there's that. Yes. Very true. Actually, I think she likes you. I think.
Are you trying to pout?
Yeah. You trying to do blue?
My
blue thunder was it? Steel. Blue steel, yeah. Poor girl. Poor girl. She's going to have to freeze frame on that. Well, anyway, sorry, I've waffled over and I'm 10 minutes late. I'm going to be told off.
Thank you very much for watching.
Yeah, we better go then. Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally.
Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right
now. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.